Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
The Color of Sky and Stone by Sarah Davison. She is the only one who truly sees him, which makes her his greatest threat. Undercover cop Tane Tamari has made it his life's mission to stay out of sight. Given the dangers inherent in his job, the last thing he can afford is to step into the open and become a target again. Then a letter from a mysterious stranger changes everything. Although the letter was not meant for him, somehow, on a greater cosmic scale, it feels as though it is. But answering it will make Tane vulnerable. How can he emerge from the shadows and risk everything for a woman he has never met? If he does, more than his heart could be on the line. So could his life. And hers.
On this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense, I'm chatting with Sarah Davison, who has a passion for writing stories that keep readers on the edge of their seats and maybe swooning a little. So welcome to my show, Sarah.
Thanks, Sarah. Really appreciate you having me on, and greetings from Ontario, Canada.
All right, our friend to the north there. I love it. And I love talking to another Sarah, so yay. That's always fun. Always fun, too. So let's just dive in and get to talking about writing, because I love to hear other romantic suspense authors and how they got into writing romantic suspense. So tell me your journey to romantic suspense.
Okay. You know what? I never actually made the conscious decision to write romantic suspense. I always wanted to write a book. So I did a degree in English literature, and I took every course and workshop that I could, basically doing everything except writing, because the idea of just sitting down and writing a whole book was so daunting. But then I was in church one Easter Sunday morning, and I was paying attention, but I did get sort of this whole idea for a book, like the characters, the beginning, the middle, the end, everything. And I went home and wrote it, and it took about 5 years of rewriting and reworking and figuring out what I had no idea that I didn't know to make it a quality story. But that did become my first book. And it just seemed like every time I sat down to seriously write that it was romantic suspense that came out. And I think probably it was just because that's my favorite genre to read. So that helped.
Yeah, no, I love that, Sarah. That's funny because I find when I read books, and I read a variety of books, as I'm sure most of us do, and sometimes I'll read a straight romance, and I'm like, okay, who's dying? Who's after them? I'm like, oh, wait, that's not happening here.
I know. You're a little bit sensitive, right?
Yes, yeah, and I just can't imagine. I don't think I could write a romance without the suspenseful part, because that's just how where my mind goes. I'm like, okay, I don't know how to create the conflict without the suspense as a large part of that conflict. Of course, we have the inner conflict, et cetera, of our characters, but it's the outs and the mystery. I love trying to make readers guess who's behind it and why. That's part of my thrill with writing that. But for you, what's the hardest part of writing in this genre?
Well, you know what? There's challenges with both parts of that, with the suspense and the romance. So I find that the biggest challenge with the suspense part, especially with Christian fiction, is it's hard to come up with kind of a new and different storyline. I mean, I feel like there's only so many ways you can tell a story where the heroine's in danger and the hero, who's usually a cop or a military guy, comes in to protect her, and she still somehow manages to get abducted and rescued and all that. So to come up with something that's kind of new and different but believable to readers is definitely a challenge. And also just maintaining that level of suspense from beginning to end is definitely a challenge. And trying to come up with a bit of a twist at the end, too, to throw readers off is always fun. But the problem with the romance part is that, you know, with suspense, a tight timeline is really good. So, you know, readers of or people who watch the show 24 know that the tighter the timeline, the greater the suspense. And that's tricky with the love story because, you know, that takes time. So the biggest thing I noticed in Fiction of Romance and Suspense is that readers struggle to buy that the love story has developed fully. So trying to merge those two, which work great together, but also work on different timelines, is a really big challenge.
Yes, no, I agree. It can be very challenging to have them fall in love while they're running for their lives, like I like to put it, and to make it believable. And to, yeah,
right.
And we're that's why I think a lot of times, sometimes you put those epilogues in there where we can show, oh yeah, they may have been like falling in love, but here they we give them time to develop a deeper relationship.
Right. Or what a lot of what I like to do is give them a history, so that there's already kind of a foundation for that relationship, or at the end just kind of hint that they will get together in the end. So give them that time. Yeah.
Right. Right. Exactly. So let's talk about accuracy in books, because that's always important. And how do you? What are some of the things that you do to ensure that your books are accurate?
Yeah. That's a good question for me, because actually I consider myself a lazy writer. I don't do a ton of research beforehand. I have a lot of author friends who do so much. But I'm a pantser. I kind of tend to make the story up as I go along. So I don't do a lot of that research beforehand. But I do really want to make sure that what I do have in there is accurate. So I do what you're not supposed to do, which is I will stop and do research as I come up to something, like how a certain model of weapon works or whatever. I'll do that research and put that in at the time. A lot of writers will put in a note to look that up later. But I will just do it at the time. And kind of like editing, which I also do, which you're not supposed to do. But I am also an editor, so I can't really take off that cap. So by the time I get done a first draft, it's pretty clean. So it kind of goes against any writing guide ever, but it works for me. You have to find what works for you, right?
Yes, no, definitely. No, I'm with you. Well, I mean, I do a mix of that. I'm more of a panster. You know, the characters kind of tell me where they need to go. I kind of have a rough idea of the story arc, you know, what the main suspense is and maybe who the bad guy is, although that has changed sometimes. But I don't have I don't do a lot of heavy plotting. Sometimes I'll put in, look this up, but if it's really critical to the story, then I'll actually stop and look it up and find the answer.
Yeah, it kind of makes it interesting, right? It gives you that, just a little bit of a break from the writing to look up something interesting that adds to the story. And I find that sometimes that changes a little bit of the direction of the story too, so it's more helpful for me to do it at the time, so. It works for me.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, and I think that's the best advice. You know, people, you know, they always ask writers, especially when you've had more than one book published and you can tell that this is a career of sorts for you, that, you know, what to do? Well, I mean, besides just get your butt in the chair and write, I mean, that's the big one. Yeah, but you can try some of these. I've tried a bunch of different ways to plot and stuff, and my mind, it's become a frustration for me, because it just doesn't help, and it just doesn't work. So you have to find what works for you. What gets the book done? The way I'm doing it is not preventing me from writing.
Exactly. As you say, so for some people it does work great to have it all plotted out. I like to know the beginning, and I like to know the end, and have some sort of rough idea of how I'm going to get from one to the other. But there's a lot of fluidity along the way, which is makes it more fun for me. Like, even the characters kind of make themselves known to me as I write them, and it's more fun for me to write that way.
Yes, yeah, no, I agree. Although, I don't know about you, Sarah, but there's been times when I'll be in, like, later in the book and go, oh, yeah, that's why that happened in chapter 10.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And also sometimes I don't plot out the whole series. I have sometimes written myself into a bit of a corner with a sequel where I have to incorporate something I put in the first book that, you know, maybe if I'd done an overview of the series before I started, I might not have. But, you know, that's just an extra challenge, so that's okay too.
Yeah. I love how you put that. That's just an extra challenge. It's not. It's okay. Yeah. It is. It is what I is. So, and I love that you picked this question to talk about because I just think it's fun about regret. Because sometimes we have regrets as writers. Have you ever regretted killing off a character? And I'm guessing the answer is yes, because if it was no, then it'd be kind of a short discussion. But
well,
why?
Kind of
why do you have that regret?
It's probably a yes and no. I can't honestly say I do regret killing off a character. Certainly not a villain, but I have killed off two main characters that readers were really attached to, and I have heard about it both times for sure. A reader of mine, he's so great, so encouraging, but he never misses an opportunity to post online about how he can't let go of the fact that I killed off one of my characters. But I had to do it for the sake of the story, and for me, that always has to remain true to the story. What I do regret is if I have actually really upset characters or readers, sorry. Because that's never my goal. I want to entertain them, and I want them to make them think, maybe. But I never want them to just be upset, So I always hope that I've written it in a way that is believable and that is true to the story, and that they will forgive me for it in the end.
Yes. Yeah. No, I think that's so true. And there are just, I mean, there are decisions that we make that we know, oh, well, this is going to hurt.
Yeah,
in the story.
I always tell them that. It hurts me too because I love my
kids. Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. So we only have a few more minutes, but I'd love to know what readers ask you when they meet you. What are some of the things that they want to know?
I think the most common question I get is how I get my story ideas. And that's a really tough question for me. I have friends, writer friends, that when we're out, they are just getting story ideas from, like, the person waiting on us at the table that's going to be a character in their book, or something happens and they're going to write a story about that. And I just don't look at the world that way. I think I'm not entirely sure where my ideas come from. I believe they come from God and also just somewhere deep inside of me. Now, having said that, I do have two theories that I can kind of pinpoint where the seed for them came from. One is my first series, the Seven Trilogy, which is set about 30 years in the future and has a bit of an end times feel to it. And I know that came out of a series that a pastor of ours did on the Book of Revelation, which I love. And another series of mine, Two Sparrows for a Penny, has a human trafficking theme. And that came from, I was at a women's conference a few years ago in our capital city, Ottawa. And the speaker was speaking about human trafficking. And I just felt like I was so naive going in. I just had no idea how prevalent it was in the world, but in my country. And she made the point that if we were staying in a hotel that night, which we were, that, you know, she could pretty much guarantee that somewhere in the building someone was being trafficked. And that just drove it so powerfully.
Yeah.
Like I don't think I left all night. So I know that that series came out of that too. So once in a while, something like that will happen, but most of the time, I don't really know. So that's a hard question to answer.
Yeah.
I try.
No, that's great. I think it just shows that, you know, we're all different. Our brains all look at life and circumstances and differently, and that we just all get our ideas from a wide variety of sources. And I think that should be encouraging for any aspiring writers, young writers, and, you know, young as in their writing careers, know, to think that there's no one place to get them. They can come from all over the place. So just keep your eyes and ears and heart open, and who knows what kind of stories you may come up with.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's the same as, you know, whether you're a plotter or a pantser, like anything else, you just have to go with what works for you, and that's how the best stories are going to come out of you, right?
Yes, Definitely. Well, we are out of time, and this has been such fun talking with you, Sarah. So thanks again for being on my show.
Well, thanks so much for having me. It was great.
You've been listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense. Stay tuned for an excerpt for one of Sarah's recent romantic suspense novels, The Color of Sky and Stone.
Now an excerpt from The Color of Sky and Stone by Sarah Davison. This might be the most foolish thing Leah Swanson had ever done. Yet another evening stuck in her hotel room would push her off the deep end, though. Even if the other members of her team didn't agree, the risk was worth it. She settled on a wooden chair at a table in the back corner of the pub. In keeping with the Renaissance-era theme of the place, the restaurant was lit only by flickering sconces set every few feet along the walls. Perfect for someone trying to lay low. The pub was full, humming with conversation and the clinking of cutlery against dishes, but none of the other patrons appeared to notice her. As she pushed back the hood of her sweatshirt, her eyes locked with the intense gray ones of a man in black jeans and a black t-shirt several tables away. Dale, head of her security force. He frowned but didn't make any attempt to keep her from exposing her face, only swept his gaze around the room as she had done, assessing the threat level. Low, from what she could tell. Her sister Eden, a journalist, had gotten held up while out on assignment, but she'd texted she would meet Leah here in a few minutes. Leah reached for the laminated menu, slick with a layer of grease, but stopped when a man sitting at the next table, his left side to her, caught her eye. He was eating alone, and Leah took a few seconds to admire the way his long-sleeve paisley dress shirt appeared to have been tailor-made for his broad shoulders. With the side of his fork, he cut into a meat pie, and the rich aroma of beef and gravy mingled with the smell of deep-fried food hanging thick in the place. She breathed in the decadent combination greedily, like fresh air after bursting out of a house on fire. The man shifted in her direction, and Leah grabbed for the menu. Her elbow caught the spoon lying near the edge of the table, sending it clattering to the floor. Dale scowled. Several other people glanced over, and Leah slumped in her seat, propped her elbow on the table, and dug the tips of her fingers into her forehead.
"Excuse me."
The guy in the paisley shirt had walked over to her table. The faint hint of cologne, an intoxicating combination of trees and earth, drifted from him, and Leah barely resisted the urge to close her eyes and just breathe it in. Her cheeks slightly warm, she shot a glance at Dale, who was watching them, coiled like a cheetah about to lunge at a grazing antelope. She shook her head slightly, which didn't ease the tension in his body in the slightest. Paisley Man was tall, a few inches over 6 feet, and Leah tipped her head to see his face. He held up the spoon.
"I'll get you a clean one."
"Oh, no." Warmth flooded Leah's cheeks. "That's not..." The man was already gone, wending his way around tables to cut off the server who'd been heading their way. He said something to the young woman in the short skirt and a t-shirt with a pub logo on the front of it. She took the spoon from him before spinning around to return to the kitchen. When the stranger started back toward her, Dale half rose, but Leah lifted her fingers from the table. He sank down but remained perched on the edge of the seat. The man stopped next to her.
"She's bringing a clean one out for you."
"You really didn't need to do that."
"It was no trouble. It's a bit of a gamble using the cutlery in this place at the best of times, and the 5-second rule definitely does not apply here."
He ran the toe of his gleaming leather Oxford over a sticky patch on the floor. Even in the dim lighting, his dark eyes held humor. No one who posed a serious threat would be able to conjure that, would they? And he didn't seem to recognize her,
which meant the disguise was holding up. When was the last time she'd had a normal conversation with someone who didn't know or care who she was? Without giving herself time to think about it, Leah pointed to the seat across from her. "Would you like to sit down?" She didn't dare look at Dale this time, but it wasn't necessary to see his face to know she would hear about this later. The man hesitated. Had he been waiting for someone? A date, maybe? The warmth in her cheeks intensified, but before she could let him off the hook, he grinned. "Sure." He pulled out the chair and sat. The server bounded to their table, her blonde ponytail swishing from side to side. She zeroed in on the man across from Leah, which suited Leah fine. "Here you go." She set the spoon in front of him, somehow managing to look perky even while performing that mundane gesture.
"Thanks."
The man spared her a brief glance before nudging the spoon across the table to Leah.
"Can I get you anything else?"
The young woman's attention remained fully on him, and he finally gave in and looked up at her. Leah took the opportunity to contemplate him. His eyes were dark, and his hair cut close to his head. A thin layer of stubble covered his cheeks and chin. His features were a devastating combination of black and Asian, and Leah couldn't fault the server for tripping all over herself.
"I've already eaten, but the lady would probably like to order something."
He inclined his head in Leah's direction.
"Just coffee, please."
Given the grease on the menu and the fried food on every plate she could see, there likely wasn't a single thing she could order here. She hadn't come for the food anyway.
"Make that too."
The man smiled at the server, which lit her up like a Japanese lantern.
"And would you mind bringing me a takeout container?"
"Sure, no problem."
As the server traipsed away, Leah looked over at the table where half his food still sat on the plate. She winced.
"I took you away from your dinner. I'm sorry."
The man waved a hand through the air.
"It's fine. I wasn't that hungry. Just..."
When he trailed off, she tilted her head.
"What?"
"Tired, I guess."
He ran a hand over his eyes. When he lowered it, a shadow lurked behind the humor. The man carried a heavy burden. Did he have no one in his life he could share it with?
"Rough day."
"You could say that. Have you ever been about to do something you know was right, but will hurt people you care about?"
Leah didn't hesitate. "Yes."
"Then you know how I feel."
"I believe I do."
Her choice of career had certainly hurt people she cared about, the after effects as destructive as a 6.0 magnitude earthquake. He gazed at her a moment, a thin web of connection spinning between them, before straightening in the chair as though he'd sloughed off whatever momentarily weighed him down.
"Enough about that."
He held out a hand.
"I'm Victor."
She slid her fingers into his.
"Leah."
Although he was ridiculously good-looking and smelled exactly like she imagined the grounds surrounding those mansions in heaven must, Leah felt nothing when their eyes met above their clasped hands. No spark, at least. A twinge of compassion did squeeze her chest. After eating by himself, he'd spilled his heart out to a complete stranger, which likely meant he knew how it felt to be completely alone, even in a crowded room. Something else they shared. He released her hand easily, as though he'd felt as little connection as she had, and leaned back as the server set a cup of coffee before each of them and an empty container in front of him.
"Anything else?"
Victor glanced at Leah, and she shook her head.
"That's it, thanks."
The woman must have gotten the message finally as she took off without attempting to engage him. They kept the discussion light as they sipped their coffees, It felt comfortable talking to him. If things were different with her, if her life wasn't what it was, maybe the two of them could have been friends. A rising murmur in the room drew her from the conversation, and she glanced around. Numerous other patrons were shooting looks at the two of them, and several held their phones in her direction. A woman shoved her way past a male server, nearly knocking him over. She appeared to be on a mission, headed straight for Leah. Leah scanned the restaurant, seeking the nearest exit. When the woman had almost reached Dale, he stood, blocking her way. The woman attempted to push past him, and he shot out an arm to stop her. Victor followed Leah's horrified gaze. For a moment, he stared at the scene. Then he lasered in on her. The look she'd seen 1,000 times washed over his face. Recognition. Panic followed hot on its trail. He shoved back his chair.
Could you excuse me for a moment?
Of course. Her throat tight, Leah watched as he tossed several bills next to his half-eaten dinner before making his way around tables and through an arched doorway beneath a sign indicating the men's room. So much for a normal conversation with someone who didn't know or care who she was. The shimmering connection that had formed when she told him she understood how he felt stretched tauter between them with every step he took away from her. It was unlikely he'd be back, but something in her couldn't stand to leave things the way they were. Leah grabbed her bag, rooted around in it for a pen, then scribbled a few lines across the white paper placemat. "What's going on?" She jerked at the sound of her sister's voice, the pen sliding across the page to make an inch-long line under the last few words she'd written. No time to fix it. Leah signed her name and folded the placemat in half. "I just had an interesting conversation with a man, but he left to go to the bathroom, and I doubt he'll return. Do you think you could give him this?" She folded the paper again until it was only a small square clutched between her fingers. "How will I know him?" Victor emerged from the arch opening and, without a glance toward the back corner, made an abrupt turn to the right, heading for the exit. Leah nodded. "That's him in the paisley shirt." "On it." Eden snatched the paper from her. "I don't know what happened here, but you seem to have attracted a lot of attention. Go to the hotel with Dale. I'll catch up with you there and the three of us can debrief." Which would not be a fun conversation. Still, leaving now before the situation degenerated further might be the first right move Leah had made all evening. As her sister hurried toward the exit, Leah stood and slung her bag onto her shoulder before lifting the hood of her sweatshirt over her head. Kind of like trying to blow out a lit fuse on a stick of dynamite, but it might help limit the damage as they left the building. Although, given the storm raging in Dale's eyes as she approached the head of her security team, it was a little too late for that.
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.